seems like the only news on is COVID-19. The coronavirus has taken over our lives. But I've been wondering, what is missing in this picture? What's missing from the mainstream media about us, about our community? And for example, it took them weeks, if not months, to rediscover health disparities where they weren't reporting on a disproportionate amount of people of color that were actually dying from COVID-19. Now they've picked it up and they've started to look at that. What about our community? Are we getting the notice that we need about what's going on with us? So I turn to our three guests today to find out their perspective on what is and isn't happening to the LGBTQ community. So I want to welcome Executive Director, Out Boulder County, Marty Moore, Chief Executive Officer from the Center on Colfax in Denver, Rex Fuller, and Executive Director of One Colorado for our statewide perspective, Daniel Ramos. So who'd like to start with what is and isn't happening in our community?
This is Rex. And I think that, like many in the wider community, this has just been a real shock to the system, to everyone in the LGBTQ community. All of us are having to deal with, you know, the sudden need to work from home, the sudden need to be isolated. And I think that that takes a toll. You had mentioned health disparities. In the wider society, certainly health disparities for the LGBTQ community are pretty well documented in terms of health outcomes and mental health. And this is proving to be a difficult situation for many people in the community who are dealing with this new isolation.
Right. I think isolation is a huge issue for everyone, but might be particularly more difficult in our communities as well, Rex.
This is Marty, and I, you know, we got a survey out at Out Boulder a week into the self-quarantine. And just like Rex said, you know, we already knew we had disparities. We knew from a 2018 survey that in Boulder County, we had real issues around mental health in our LGBTQ community, and those have been exacerbated. And I think as we struggle in this new reality, trying to figure out how to address those quickly is something that keeps me awake at night. The other thing that I think that it points out, so in Boulder County, we have a lot of therapists, but only a few of them take Medicaid clients. And so I'm pretty sure those slots are probably already full as we see an increase of people reaching out. So I have some concerns around that for sure. I also, you know, we're just like regular people in that we are losing our jobs. How are we going to pay the rent? And we know at Out Boulder County that people reach out to us, people who are in need, before they go to one of the other organizations. Domestic violence, for example, we know that's on an increase. And usually people reach out to Out Boulder County and say, help, where should I go? And we often sit with them and make the phone call. That's not happening right now because we're not physically in that space. So there's a lot of concerns, and we're just trying to figure out how to address them.
Yeah, well, good morning, and it's great to be with you all. Again, Daniel, One Colorado. And I think there are a number of things that aren't being talked about in the impacts of the LGBTQ community. I think the first one, and I think we've done a great job at highlighting some of these, but the increased risk for our community. When you look at the smoking rates in the LGBTQ community, double that of the non-LGBTQ population, and the risk that holds there. You may look at some other issues around compromised immune systems and what that means for our community. And so that's, I think we've been getting that message out. We collectively have been getting that message out in a really, really strong way, just to talk about how serious we should take this and what impact it may have on our community. I think the other thing, and we've talked a little bit about this so far, you know, one of the things that we're most concerned about at One Colorado is we were slated to launch our statewide health tour this year. We were doing a 12-city statewide tour on LGBTQ health disparities with our 2018 research that we published last year. called Closing the Gap, the Turning Point for LGBTQ Health. And in that report, we learned that LGBTQ folks are diagnosed with depression and anxiety at a rate 3 times higher than the non-LGBTQ population. So we know that that too is being exacerbated in this time. We also found that from our 2011 survey to our 2018 survey, that people actually felt more lonely, more isolated. And that was all before COVID. And so we know that one of the things that we've been talking a lot about are how do we stay connected with our community? We know that folks may have, you know, lost their partner in the AIDS crisis and may have no one to care for them if they're an LGBTQ older adult. If folks have been rejected by their families, they may not have another person or a support system to help them get through this. And so it really is this piece where we as the LGBTQ community really need to double down on those efforts to stay connected, because the rates of depression and anxiety in our community are incredibly high. And we also know that there are some unique challenges around how we've created social and support systems around ourselves. And it's really time for us to dig deep to make sure that we don't lose those. Mm-hmm.
Well, Rex and Daniel, both of you raised isolation as an issue. You know, I think in the media that they're catching on to some of the mental health aspects of COVID, that it's not just a physical problem we've got to deal with. And of course, I mean, because of the lethality possibilities, people are very worried about that. But I think as the physical distancing order continues, isolation is greater for the whole community, more broadly, but particularly, like you're saying, isolation, particularly in this, our communities within the queer community. So what kinds of things, what thoughts do you have about that and what your particular centers are trying to do about it?
Well, at the Center on Colfax, it has been a real challenge, but we have been trying to really create, kind of overnight and on the fly, ways to connect using virtual media. One of our key reasons for being is to promote community connections. And there's a lot of challenges to it. Another big concern that we have is protecting confidentiality of people who come to us, and trying to create safe spaces online. So it is not necessarily simple. There's certainly stories from around the country of other centers who, say, are using Zoom and will suddenly have somebody infiltrate the Zoom meeting and start posting, you know, ugly images or hate speech. That's happened to a number of centers. We've tried to take steps to prevent that from happening. One of our largest programs at the center is serving older adults, which sometimes can present some technology challenges. Mm-hmm. So we've had to do a lot of training on the fly for many of the older adults in our program to be able to participate in these online meetings. But I'm very happy that I feel we're quickly adapting. We have been able to move many of our regular programs into online meetings, support groups for older adults, for the transgender community. Sometimes it's actually tricky because of existing laws around youth. There are laws about how you can interact with young people that are affecting us, but we are working to manage those. I also think that many youth are using different platforms than maybe older adults are using. So we've been launching into Discord and using Instagram more and things like that, which have been helping us to continue to build community online and do it in a safe and productive way.
And for us, you know, I think we've really been focused, you know, as I think all of us have, is what do our organizations look like in the digital space? So how we offer programming, how we engage on social media, and how we use other means that have always been at our fingertips, but I think have been less used most recently, and that being the phone. And so one of the things that we will be launching this week is a program called One Colorado Connects. It's a new program we'll be launching this week that is all calling our supporters across the state. It will be doing check-ins to really see how folks are doing. And how we connect them with resources. I know that for myself, there are so many resource pages out there that I'm just starting to like gloss over everything. And so we've pulled just a couple things together because I know there are a lot of things out there. Just if someone needs any resources around unemployment, their student loans, enrolling in healthcare, that all of those things will be in one place. So it'll be talking about that. Beyond that, we'll also be discussing, you know, checking in with folks to make sure that they've completed their census. One of the things that we did a couple weeks ago was we did a virtual town hall on the census and why it's important for the LGBTQ community to be counted. And as we're talking a lot about, you know, disparities in data collection and what that looks like. So that'll be even more important for us. And then I think the last piece that we'll be checking in with folks about is because they're at home to make sure that their voter registration is updated. Because we know that our primary here in Colorado will be on June 30th. Mail-in ballots will start hitting mailboxes in the middle of June. And so we want to make sure that folks are ready because we know that elections will still go on. And that depending on, you know, the outcome of many of these elections will have incredible impacts on our lives, especially in the recovery of post-COVID. And so that, yes, it's an important time for us to make sure that we're checking in with the community, that we're offering resources, that we're finding ways to keep people connected in these really uncertain times. And so that's been, I think, a really unique challenge is how do we do all of those things? And I'm sure, you know, both for Rex and Marty, who are both planners of some of our Pride festivals here, that too will provide some really unique challenges because most of our summers are spent together in community, learning about what resources are offered in different communities, what people are doing in areas all across the state. And so that will feel really different this year. And so we're just trying to figure that piece out of what does our summer and perhaps our fall even look like. And I think I can speak for many executive directors in saying planning in these uncertain times continues to be a daily challenge of just how we meet the needs of the community, knowing that even before COVID, there was so much need. And now as we're in COVID, there's even more need. And so that, you know, there may be some more ideas that flow as we're grappling with some of the unique challenges that we're facing in these times.
You're listening to Outsources, and we're speaking with Marty Moore, Rex Fuller, and Daniel Ramos about the impact of COVID on our community. Marty, I know you've been wanting to say something about all these issues, about what you see happening.
Well, I would just say that everything that Rex and Daniel talked about is exactly what we've been doing at Out Boulder, getting groups up and online. One of the things that's interesting from my perspective or from Out Boulder's perspective is our youth groups. So like Rex said, there's rules around reaching out to youth, whether it's been in person or whether it's online. So Zoom has a HIPAA compliant version, which we've purchased, and random people can't sign up. There has to be a connection with our youth staff. They have to be approved and they get the information to sign in. Our middle school group is growing. Our high school group is not. Those numbers have fallen off. Our youth program coordinator, who's fantastic, is trying a variety of different things, but have some concern around that. I think also in this new reality, we knew that through numbers from the Healthy Kids Colorado survey, that online bullying is real, and especially real for our LGBTQ youth. So I have some concerns going forward into this new reality, what that looks, trying to find resources for parents and youth. You know, I'm so proud of our staff. We got all of our groups, except for the figure drawing group, is up and online. I think one of the things that is tough for all nonprofits is the stability of the organization. And how do you fundraise in this reality? And when there are basic needs like housing and medical care, making sure that we remember that the importance of our work, although I may not be handing a bag of food to somebody, is that important work, and making sure that we have that message out there. We're going to be here afterwards. And so in addition to moving programs forward from census, which is so important, to voting, to staying connected and in dealing with isolation, there's also this, we're working at home alone, trying to figure out the best ways to fundraise and to ensure that we're here after COVID.
Yeah, you're pointing out not only challenges to each individual out there, but to our organizations, and the health and safety of our organizations is threatened by this, as, you know, as the whole economy kind of lurches sideways. So it's a very scary time for an organization, directors, like you three directors, trying to make sure your health and safety of your organization is going to continue, because so many people rely on all three of you. And I've certainly thought about the physical distancing. You know, I'm a psychologist, so I hated it when they picked social distancing. It's like, no, I want to say no physical. It's physical distancing, not social. But even the physical distancing piece is so devastating and difficult for our community, because people have spent many times their whole lives trying to find our community and being close to it. And how, when every center and almost every business that has been available for a connection is really not there in the ways we would need it to be. So several other things have been put out there, health disparities, domestic violence, money, immune systems, the issues around mental health. We tend in our community to have more anxiety and depression up, and anxiety's up in the whole world right now. Isolation is up, and demand on the support systems is up. So what do you want to develop a little bit more in the time we have?
Well, I think that one of the issues that we will all soon be having to deal with is just grief. Grief in general. The last time I looked at the numbers, I saw there had been 257 deaths in Colorado. It's probably gone up since then. But you know, I know that some of those people are members of the LGBT community, and those are families, those are loved ones, those are friends who are not able to be with the people who've passed away, and not be able to grieve in community in a meaningful way. And it's very difficult. One of the priorities that we had for the center going into 2020 is creating a new strategic plan for the center. We do one every 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I really think that we had not anticipated how this crisis will probably impact our strategic plan and the needs that we need to address in the community going forward, that we didn't even know that those were going to be a need. So I think it will have profound effects on our community, but on all communities moving forward.
Yeah, I think all these goal setting and strategic plans for the next several years are like, boop, out the window, in a way, having to go back and tweak a lot of things. I mean, some stuff will carry forward, but others are, like you say, who would have dreamed this? And here we are in a situation that we would not have believed. And I think you're absolutely right about grief. That's just starting to bubble up in the media. It started with, I first read an article around anticipatory grief. And now I think it's not anticipatory. It is for some, but it is definitely in the grieving process right now. And the things that sometimes we use to grieve in our community is gathering together as people, and ceremony and ritual, and how that hasn't been able to happen. That usually you call people and gather people around you when you need to grieve the loss of someone. And then there's another piece, which is grieving loss of not a person, but of your community, of maybe life as you were leading it is going to change. You know, grieving a job, grieving the loss of being together. I think there's huge levels of and different waves and aspects of grief alone that we have with us right now. Some people are dealing with it at this moment, others it's coming their way, that we don't think about as primary in our community of needing to deal with, but I think it becomes primary.
Yeah, I think the one piece that I'd add to that is the, you know, just like how quickly the world is changing, and for us to be aware and just acknowledging how different the world is. If you look at what we were doing a month ago, compared to 2 weeks ago, compared to where we are today, a lot has changed. And so I think to the point around grief is that, you know, before, you know, probably a month ago, 2 weeks ago, you know, there was a degree or two of separation, of just how serious, this global pandemic is. And now it feels a lot closer to home, I think, for a lot of people. And so, you know, what I told my team last week, was just this reality of just like, you know, a lot of people are going to get sick. Folks are going to die. And we need to just acknowledge that. We need to name it for what it is, because it's going to affect our work. It's going to affect our relationships. And so we need to be really aware of reaching out, and that, and really reminding folks, that, you know, it in this time, you know, and in many times, you know, that when we ask, how are people doing, we need to mean it. And we need to be ready for how people respond. And I think part of that too, is reminding ourselves, just to be really gentle with each other, in this time, that we're all coping, dealing with things in really different ways. And so that sort of gentleness, we really have to practice it, in a way that I hope remains, after this crisis.
Mm-hmm. Can I say one other thing, just, I guess maybe trying to have kind of a positive spin on it, and it's difficult to have a positive spin right now, but I'm hoping that this may be able to create opportunity. We've certainly felt like we've had to stretch and grow our creativity at the center, over the last month. But you know, this could be maybe a good opportunity for our community. So now we have an online trans support group for folks. And, you know, maybe if you're living in Sterling or Grand Junction or someplace else, there might not be a transgender support group, but now there's an online way that you could participate. And, you know, there may be other ways that you could reach out to community if you're living in a more rural or isolated place. Perhaps this is something that we can continue after to help the health of our community. Daniel had mentioned Pride Fest, which is certainly very important to the center. It's our largest annual fundraiser, and the future of this year's Pride Fest is really a big question mark. We don't know. All public events have been canceled through May 11th, and they're not making decisions for summer events until April 30th. And they're not allowing you to choose new dates if you want to postpone. So we're kind of stuck in a holding pattern, but we're not wasting our time. We're working on ways. How could we create a virtual Pride experience? Mm-hmm. And again, that's kind of, how can we use that creativity to enhance what we're doing when we are able to get back together in person?
Mm-hmm. I think that's so, so important to look at this, the new opportunity, the little bits of silver lining that we can see right away. And I guess for the last pieces of our moments here together, you know, what does give you hope out of this? You know, where are the silver linings that you started to talk about, Rex, and maybe Marty and Daniel want to chime in on what does give you hope in all this? I always think of Harvey Milk's quote, you got to give them hope.
I think what gives me hope is I just work with so many cool people, whether it's volunteers or staff or donors, who, like, every time I'm in a conversation, they spark a new idea. Rex was talking about creativity. It's like, wow, hadn't thought about that. Mind blown. The commitment, you know, even though the way we're providing services is different, all of our missions remain the same. And that gives me hope. The mission, our missions are solid, and it's our job to make sure that we're able to carry that out in brand new ways. And I'm with Rex. I mean, the excitement of being able to have people from outside of our area dial into calls to get support, I think is something exciting. We're trying to think about what it looks like when this is lifted. What do we keep in place that we've newly developed, and what do we go back to? And I don't know that we've landed on anything yet. Our space has always been too small. We use a shoehorn to put 30, 35 people into a group. I think the new rules will be something like, you know, there'll be some distancing thing still. So do we have to then start renting out additional space? Because people are going to want to meet. When this is over, people are going to want to see each other's faces. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? So we're trying to hold what we're currently doing with what could be happening. And what gives me hope is all the smart people, the committed people who are part of the LGBTQ community.
Daniel?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that I'm seeing is just how good people can be. I think one of the things that I've thought a lot about is, you know, and I've sort of believed, and I don't know if where this exists or, you know, but I've always said that for us to restore our faith in humanity, we need to be more human. And now is the time for us to be more human. When we think about connection in a really different way, when we think about our emotions and who we are as individuals and what it means for our community in really different ways. All these things are being redefined. And so for us to really understand, like, who are we as humans? What does our humanity look like? This is a really good time for us to really dial that piece in. So, and I've just seen so many, just like the best in people. And that gives me a ton of hope. You know, the one thing that we know about the LGBTQ community is that we've always been a creative being. We've had to create spaces. We've had to create culture. We've had to create it in these ways in some really challenging times. And so we are an incredibly creative and resilient people because we've had to be. And so it's that piece too of where we, you know, I've been thinking a lot about what are the things I hope stick around when this is all over. What does the world look like post-COVID? And my hope really is that people find these incredible ways to connect where we really get to understand the sort of depth of connection. And it's something that we long for, and it's something that that we help others create.
I want to thank all three of you, Rex Fuller, Daniel Ramos, Marty Moore, for your thoughts. This has been Outsources, and I would invite you all to tune in next week at 6:30 on KGNU. Or you can always stream it on kgnu.org or catch it later on our news blog, news.kgnu.org. You can still enroll in health insurance through the end of this month. Wear your mask, physically distance, not social. Stay connected with your support systems. We don't want you sick, and we don't want to lose you. I'm your host, Karen Rayforth. Good evening.